Blog Talk Radio.
This is Marcy Cheek, and this is my show, Say What? When? Where? And the question I've asked my whole life, why? And tonight we're going to talk about letting your difference make the difference. Are you a square peg in a round hole? Or maybe you're a round peg in a square hole? Or maybe you're a square peg and a square hole. You remember I discussed last week how I learned that I was a reflector? A reflector is definitely a square peg in a round hole. But there are manifestors, there's projectors and generators. So there is room for all of us in this mandala of life. Just let your difference make the difference. So let's take a look at these mandalas. The primordial form of a mandala is a circle. And the circle is the most pure representation of source energy because there's no beginning or no ending. The end is the beginning. And the beginning is the end. And a circle encloses a symmetrical space in such a way that each point on the circumference is equidistant from the center. And at the still center of the circle, there is tranquility and peace. And once the circle is formed, then there's many other forms that can be put inside the circle. Squares, triangles, rectangles. These beautiful mandalas are symbolic pictures of our cosmos, both the inner cosmos of ourselves and the outer cosmos, sacred geometries that represent divine energies, actually in some cases divine beings that embody the cosmic forces that are behind existence. And a mandala can help our mind become focused and tranquil, and also help us to access progressively deeper levels of our unconscious that allows us to experience a spiritual sense of oneness with all things, both inside ourselves and outside of ourselves. A mandala can be used as an aid to meditation, because all of us are born with that innate desire to see meaning in the world and try to make sense of it all. This is what leads us to ask those questions. Say what? When? Where? Why? And in this digital age where we're all so stimulated all the time by text messages and fast-moving video games and sports or visuals that go so far beyond our normal boundaries like the Transformers and other digital characters, it can just be a challenge to try to bring our mind to be at rest and to be calm. So let me just read you a paragraph about the art of seeing from this book that I took these pictures from, of the mandalas. It is called Meditating with Mandalas by David Fontana. And he says that we're taught to look for answers, as if everything could be put into words. But we are also born with a complementary ability to experience things just as they are, without questioning them or having to put a label on it. Thus, when we see a picture or an abstract piece of modern art, and we immediately try to seek its meaning as if its meaning is something distinct and separate from the picture ourselves, we're missing that chance of when we could experience something new. And when we look at a mandala, if we feel that same process starting to happen and we want to know what it's trying to say to us, or rather than just looking at it and enjoying it for its patterns and colors and for no other reason. Because this is pure acceptance. And acceptance is part of the art of seeing. This pure acceptance doesn't have a need to put a label on anything or try to understand it. What is the meaning behind that shape or form or color? We can just relax that need to compare it with something or try to make a preference for one or the other or make a judgment about it, whether it's good or bad or right or wrong. Because a mandala can teach us that we can be so preoccupied sometimes with words and labels and concepts that we no longer can just see things as they are in themselves. The mandala communicates without words. The mandala's message is with being and not with knowing. So a mandala is a reflection of something that's inside of us, and a reflection does not judge or condemn. A reflection does not flatter or try to deceive. It doesn't compare us with other people and judge us better or worse. It doesn't point out strengths or weaknesses. The mandala teaches us to just accept and allow all that we see. It teaches us not to hide from ourselves and to stop pretending that we're somebody or something that we're not. A mandala teaches us to just experience who and what we are and just to be ourselves rather than losing ourselves in some false world of some other person's idea, prejudice, or needless hope and fear. The mandala connects us to our inner self that is connected to all there is. Now, the outer self is subject to constant change, but the inner self is a permanent, stable field of all possibilities. And the mandala can activate this field of all possibilities into the moment so we can enter into it and realize our pure potential. The mandala can serve as a roadmap into the inner core of ourself where you can meet the real you. And feel the real you and unite with the real you. Now, David Fontana says that the mandala will resonate and communicate with the sacred geometry that is the makeup of our interior cosmos. Through the interaction of this sacred geometry, we can be brought into the stillness of eternity. It's beyond the madness of that everyday world we live in, that frantic fight with time every day. Where did it go? My gosh, I haven't even begun to get done what I plan to do today. And beyond all that rush and crush of the freeway, trying to get from one place to another along with everybody else, beyond that stress of management's dictates, zero risk tolerance, sales charts and sales goals, and beyond the budgets, finances that just don't seem to cover all the needs of the householder. Beyond all those disappointments of relationships, people who just don't do what they say they will. Or they say one thing and do something else. And they promise, but they end up betraying us. Those who try but just can't do it. And those who brashly break through established boundaries and trample us to pieces. The mandala reveals the stillness of eternity, where within us is the kingdom of God, which is peace and joy and righteousness. And within the kingdom of God, which is within us, is all power to create whatever we want and whatever we need to be happy, because it's all within us. And the mandala helps us identify with this power and allow it to begin to be expressed. Meditating with a mandala will allow something to express that we didn't even know we had. The mandala can begin to peel off the layers and layers of conditioning that we've received throughout our lives that's clouded or hidden this creative essence of ourself, that real expression of who we are, who we really are. So the mandala is a gorgeous, beautiful picture of nature, natural shapes and forms that all seem to fit together. What a gorgeous picture to reflect on and to enjoy. And I believe that we are human beings are a beautiful mandala, each one of us, in whatever form we are, tall or short, fat or thin, male, female, black, white, yellow, blue, green. Each of us is a specific, unique, and special form of life. There's no one else like us, not a single person. And in the overall mandala of life, each one of us fits in to make the beautiful picture. Circles fit into squares. Triangles fit into circles. Squares make spaces for circles and actually welcome the circle to help fill the space the square makes. Let your difference make the difference. You know, as humans, we represent the newest order of life here on the earth. I know we tend to think of ourselves as being the highest and best form of life on earth, but the truth is, we are the newest form of energy here. The plants and animals have been here long before we got here, and they have well-developed ways of expressing, and I might say, getting along, that we have yet to learn. For instance, in England recently, a company did some research on how dogs read minds. The question they started with was, how does a dog know that its owner's on its way home? So the dog knows to go and sit by the door to wait for their arrival. Now, the standard reason most of us would think that the dog goes to the door to wait for the owner is that the owner comes home at the same time every day. Well, of course, this assumes that the dog can tell time, which of course they can. But what they did was put a camera on the dog at home, and then they began to video the owner of the dog and had them decide to go home at different times instead of the usual time every day. And in every single case, when the owner decided they were going to go home, at the actual moment the owner decided to go home, the dog went and sat by the door to wait their arrival. It was at the moment of the decision the dog had to read their mind. Now, I took care of my granddaughter's dog for a week while she was traveling. And this was one of the most wonderful experiences of my life with an animal. Because I know this dog could read my mind. And this dog could tell time. And when it was time to go to the dog park, she would just come and sit by my chair at my desk and give me a little bark because she knew. And she knew if we were going to the dog park or not, too. She could tell because if I decided to stop at the store on the way, she'd look at me and say, "This is not the way to the dog park." So I would just explain, "Well, I'm just going to stop here for a minute and pick up a couple things and then we'll go to the dog park." And then she just would sit right down on the seat and patiently wait. And I had had a small surgery to repair a tear on my skin right before the dog came to my house to stay with me. And right from the start, she seemed to know that I was still hurting. And she would come and sit next to me on the sofa and position her body right up close next to mine so we were touching. And I could feel her sending me healing energies and love energies to help my body to heal. And just today, there was a story on the news about a German Shepherd dog who had become aware that his owner's house was becoming filled with carbon monoxide poisoning, and the dog went to the bed where his owner was sleeping and started biting him on the hand until he woke him up so they could get out of the house, and he saved his life. And have you ever watched a flock of birds fly together in beautiful swirls and fancy designs in the sky? They just all come into one mind, and they can do an instant swoop all together, and no one ever bumps into anyone else, even though they're flying wing to wing. And at my weddings every weekend at the beach, the pelicans do a flyover for my bride. And I believe, and I know this sounds silly, but I totally believe that they know that I am there, and they have it all set up. to do it. They have it all set up to do this flyover. Pelicans fly over in a beautiful V formation. And do you know they decide who's going to get to lead the formation each time? And everyone gets a chance to lead the formation. And I'll bet if you would measure the distance between each pelican in the formation, it would be an exact mathematical equation, each one perfectly aligned with all of the others. And do you know that plants are consciously aware? There's a wonderful book I read a number of years ago called The Secret Life of Plants. And I understand there's a YouTube video on this about this book now, The Secret Life of Plants. A scientist hooked a lie detector machine up to plants and did experiments. And one experiment was that they put one plant in one room and they put another plant in another room far away. And they hooked both these plants up to individual lie detector machines. And then they burned the leaf on one plant, and the other plant reacted violently to the action because they were spiritually connected. And the unburned plant was empathically feeling the pain and the agony of its fellow plant. And the scientists also spoke very harshly to one plant in the one room and then spoke lovingly to the plant in the other room. And the plant that was treated harshly died. And the plant that was spoken lovingly to grew and flourished. And I worked as a docent at the Hortense Miller Gardens in Laguna Beach. Hortense Miller was one of the five top acclaimed horticulturists in the world. And she had planted a rambling rose bush at the door to her home, which grew up to where it totally framed the doorway. And she told that bush when she first planted it that it had been chosen for its beauty, and she assured it that it was safe and it would always be loved and appreciated. And you know what? At the beginning, the rose bush had thorns. But as she went in and out of that door to her house, and as she continued to assure that rose bush that it was safe and it was loved and appreciated, that rose bush quit making thorns. And it's probably the only rose bush in the world that doesn't have any thorns. Because a rose bush only makes thorns as a protection and a defense. But when it lives in total love where there's no danger, it doesn't need to make thorns anymore. And Hortense would have us docents to her home for tea occasionally, and she would always give us a little talk about the plants. And she says that in the wild, that plants choose where they want to grow. That in whatever way a plant reproduces, whether that seed is blown by the wind or brought by a bee or just drops on the ground, that seed will allow itself to continue to be transported around by the elements and the other parts of nature until it's exactly where it wants to put down its roots. And if you buy a plant in a store or at a nursery and you bring it home to plant it, then you tell that plant that you've chosen it for its because you love it, and that you're going to tell it where you're going to put it. And then it might take it a little while to adopt to its new location, but you can help it to decide to feel safe by continuing to reassure it and give love and appreciation to your plant, and then it'll give back to you by blooming its little heart out. I bought an African violet recently to put in my spare bedroom because my family has been coming for a visit. And I put the plant on the table next to the bed where there's also a lamp. And I told the plant that it was a special surprise and it was a gift for my kids. And practically right before my eyes, I saw that plant respond. And the next couple days, it brought forth some extra flowers. And it also told me that it would appreciate it if I would leave the lamp on during the day because it would help it make more flowers. So I have been leaving the lamp on for it, and it has just bloomed and bloomed because it explained that it had started its life in a greenhouse under artificial light, and it was used to it, and it could live a full and abundant life in the light of the plant, of the lamp. And it likes to have a little drink every morning, and I use my spring water to give it the drink, and it likes to keep its soil moist. And even though I do weddings at the beach, I tell my clients that if I was a plant, there would be a tag on me that says, do not expose to direct sun, keep in shade between 68 and 72 degrees. And if we have a day at the beach that exceeds these limits by more than 10 degrees, then I have Reverend Dennis go and do the ceremony for me. Now, rarely do we have days that exceed these limits because I almost always do my ceremonies going into sunset, and by 5 to 5:30, a lovely breeze always comes up at the beach. And as the sun begins its descent into the ocean, we have perfect weather for the ceremony, and I wear a big hat that gives me the shade I need. So just as plants like and actually need full sun, like sunflowers and petunias, other plants want to be in the shade, like impatiens and coral bells. And some plants like really dry weather, like cactus and geraniums. But other plants like moist, red, humid conditions, like ivies and ferns. And did you know that a moth can detect even a 0.00001% change in humidity? And it can use this sense, which is at the end of its antennae, to tell if a flower has nectar or not. And this interaction between the moth and the flower with nectar is necessary for pollination, which is what allows the plant to create new seeds that grow into new plants. Because flowers have male and female parts. And what happens in pollination is that the male part, or the stamen, produces pollen. And this pollen or nectar needs to be gotten over to the female, where the seeds are made at the base of her pistil. Now, how does the pollen get from one plant to one part of the plant to the other? Well, one way is for animals such as bees or butterflies, moths, flies, hummingbirds to pollinate the plants. And they're not actually trying to pollinate the plant. Usually, they're at the plant to get food. But the sweet nectar, they want that sweet nectar that's made at the base of the petals. So when feeding, they accidentally rub against the stamens and they get pollen stuck all over themselves. And then when they move to the other next plant, flower to feed, some of that pollen rubs off onto this new plant's stigma. But the moth uses a tremendous amount of energy to hover over a flower to get nectar. And so to conserve its energy, it's developed this rare sense to discern the amount of humidity coming out of the flower, which will tell it whether there's any nectar in there or not, because pollen emits moisture, which is why bee pollen is sold as a skin moisturizer. And the moth can measure the amount of moisture that's being emitted from the flower, and the moth can tell if it's worth its energy to enter that flower and get some nectar or not. Wow, this is so much far more advanced than we are. And this is just one teeny tiny little action that's happening in the evening after the sun goes down and moths go out to feed. This sense is at the end of this moth's antenna. And do you know what? You have antenna. Yep, we have antennas. We can send out our antenna into a situation and read that in situation, and we can tell if there's any nectar or not. We just need to first know that we can do this and then start to do it. Practice, practice, practice. And soon you'll be using your antennae to scan an entire field of energy in which you are operating, and you will know what is going on and what to do that's in your highest and best good, saving your energy and only bringing the desired result. So these are actions and reactions and interactions that are all going on all the time in the mineral kingdom, in the plant kingdom, in the animal kingdom, and in the human kingdom. The mandala helps us to enter into all of these different actions and reactions and interactions. It can help us to understand how we were once part of the mineral kingdom, and we were once part of the plant kingdom, and we were once part of the animal kingdom. And we can reach back into those times and experiences and bring them forth now into our human experience so that we are better equipped to move into the next part of our life and be who we can really be. And I recently heard a speaker say, "Let your difference make the difference." Because first of all, there's no one like anyone else. Every single one of us is different. Each one of us is like a snowflake. There's no two alike. Now, I was listening to a lady who was teaching about crystals and using crystals for healing, and she said that sometimes people think about it as being witchcraft. And she said, "I try to explain to them that crystals just have energy. A crystal just is. It isn't good or bad or right or wrong. The crystal just manifests itself in all of its aspects. A crystal has a heartbeat and a pulse. And a crystal is a pure energy in an undisturbed natural form, which is perfect in its natural state. And we are a crystal. We are a pure energy in an undisturbed natural form that is a perfect in its natural state. And we have the final say-so about everything." We can let our energies be used for whatever we choose them to do. It's all up to us. You make the difference, and let your difference make the difference. My music tonight is by the Benedictines of Mary. These are the nuns that live in Missouri. And this CD is called Lent at Ephesus. And you can get it on Amazon.com. And I would like to close my show tonight by a saying from Tao Te Ching. He said this back in the 3rd century B.C. "Clay is fired to make a pot, but the pot's use comes from its emptiness." And this is Marcianne saying aloha. And aloha in the Hawaiian language is hello, goodbye, and I love you.